Tomorrow, Nick Robinson begins a new series looking at relations between broadcasters and politicians by exploring the fallout from the general strike of 1926. Battle for the Airwaves begins tomorrow afternoon at 1:45. But now on BBC Radio 4, our classic serial is a dramatisation of the Bengali novel written in 1929, made famous by a Satyajit Rai's award-winning and iconic film of 1955. The English translation of the title Pother Panchali is Song of the Road. Panchali refers to a genre of Bengali narrative folk song, and Pother means path. So, Oppu, our narrator, like the principal singer of the traditional Panchali, takes us along the path of his childhood.
Pother Panchali, Song of the Road, by Bibhuti Bhushan Banerjee, dramatized by Tanika Gupta. As the years creep up on me, and the gap between childhood and adulthood stretches, I find my memories settling on a very particular time and a very special place. I feel compelled to write these remembrances down, to pay my respect to the trees and nature of my youth, as well as to the pain, poverty, and indignities we, as a family, suffered. But most of all, I want to remember those I loved deeply, who have stayed with me, always. So many stories, so many turns in the road of my young life. Where to start? I will begin before I was born, in the small village of Nishchindipur in West Bengal, in the dying embers of the 19th century. My father, Horihor Ray, was a Brahmin. He lived in a small brick-built house at the extreme northern end of the village. He was not wealthy, for all he had to live on was the meager rent from a tiny plot of land he had inherited from his father, and some fees paid to him by a few households he served as family priest. At the beginning of my story, my sister Durga was 6 years old, and Indir Thakrun was still alive.
Durga, my little Shona Moni, would you like half of this banana?
Yes, please.
You should have seen this place in the old days, huh? An orchard of mangoes just there. Guavas in the southern end of the compound, huh? And at every day's end, the men would all sit and play dice. I can still hear the sound of the dice being thrown down on the board. Tuck, tuck. And the head wife of the Ray family, as beautiful and pure as the goddess Jagadhatri, she used to feed me with her own hand.
Where is she now?
Gone to the Almighty along with everyone else. No one left with whom I can talk and exchange memories.
Did your husband die?
Yes. I was married to a Kulnin Brahmin. Hardly remember what he looked like now.
Auntie!
It's true. I rarely saw him. He would visit me no longer than a night or two, and after collecting all the money that custom decreed was his due, he ticked off the village in his book and he travelled on to the next village. He died when I was very young. I had to take off all my silver bangles, rub the vermilion out of my hair, and bathe in the river. Since then, I have worn the plain white sari of a widow. Such a long time ago, but I remember it all as if it were yesterday.
That is sad.
He left a lot of widows, my husband. Kulnin Brahmins can take many wives.
Did you ever meet them? The other wives?
No. But your grandfather, Ram Chand, took me into his house and he died when your father was just 2 years old. I remember your father playing and jumping around on the road that led down to the water's edge. He climbed into a tamarind tree once, fell, and broke his arm. Your father married very young, and your mother was only 10 years old. Then he went away and left me to look after this place. It was very difficult for me. Sometimes I had nothing to eat and had to beg for food from the neighbors. The road of my life is an old one, and I have walked along it since childhood, huh? But you, my Sonamoni, my beautiful Durga, have filled my path with sweet-scented flowers.
Durga, there you are. Didn't you hear me calling?
No, Ma.
What are you hanging around here for? Come inside.
She isn't doing any harm, my dear. Only sitting here with me. Do let her stay.
No, it isn't right for her to stare at you while you're having your food. I don't like that sort of thing. Get up and come here at once.
I'll come back later, Auntie. I want to hear more stories.
Come on, Durga. Auntie, I don't know for what reasons the gods have blessed us with the honor of looking after you.
If only your father-in-law was alive to see how you mistreat me.
Mistreat you? No. Feeding you every day, whilst we have to make do with what is left over.
I am part of this family.
Interesting that no one can actually explain how you are related to us.
I have been here a long time.
Too long. Sitting around in the sun while I work on my own so that you can be comfortable.
Canes and batches may hurt the feet, but a bowl of rice still tastes as sweet.
You and your stupid old rhymes.
I looked after this house for many years whilst your husband was away studying. He left me in charge.
Funny how you stopped working the minute I came along.
I am an old woman.
That's a very good excuse for laziness. You could sweep or cook. You're a leech sucking the lifeblood out of my family. And I know you steal my cooking oils.
You're calling me a thief after everything I've done for this family.
You have done nothing. You contribute nothing.
I don't have to listen to this young mistress. I never set foot in this house again.
Go, walk, see if I care.
But there was a sadness inside Indir Thakurun's heart, and she used to spend the whole day in the bamboo grove. As soon as Durga heard about the quarrel, she would run to find Indir.
Get up, Auntie.
Durga, my darling.
I'll tell Mummy not to scold you anymore. Come back home, Auntie. I want to hear more stories. Come. Don't cry, Auntie. Here, hold my hand.
In the eastern part of my family's compound was a thatched hut which had lain unrepaired for a long time. It was here that the old woman lived. My mother hardly ever set foot in the old woman's room, but almost every evening Durga used to go there, sit on a quilt on the floor of the veranda for hours, listening to her auntie's stories. Durga missed her auntie dreadfully when she was away, and on her return would beg her for stories.
Please, auntie, please, tell me a story. The one about Piru Ray.
All right. Your father's ancestor, Vishnuram Ray, had a son called Biru Ray. At the time, the white man's power in the country was not firmly established, and it was dangerous to travel about because the roads were infested with bandits.
Bandits?
Biru Ray was the leader of a gang. By day, a gentleman like anyone else, but at night, he would pray at the Kali temple and then hide in the banyan tree that was near his den on the Thakurji Lake. Together, they would wait in the tree at nightfall. And then whenever some poor, unsuspecting traveller was walking along the road, he would jump down, cut the poor man's throat and steal his possessions.
Murder!
Then he and his fellow bandits would dump the body in the lake.
Auntie, have you seen this lake?
The banyan tree is still there, but there isn't a lake there anymore. Just a depression in the ground, though it's still known as Thakurji Lake. Farmers use that land to grow crops now. But every now and then, when they are ploughing, they find a human skull, a human leg bone, a rib cage. Shall I go on?
Yes, please, Auntie.
You're not frightened.
No, Auntie. What happened to Biru Ray?
There is a story of an old Brahmin from East Bengal and his young son who were returning home from the Kali Ganj district. It was November 1830, and the old man had left his home to collect some money for his daughter's wedding.
Hands up!
Hands in your pockets!
Help! Help! Run, boy, run! Nobody can hear you out here, old man. No point running like that.
He walked under the banyan tree.
Yes, but the old man, recognizing a fellow Brahmin, appealed to Birure.
Here, take it. Take it all. It was a dowry for my daughter's wedding. You can have it. It doesn't matter if you kill me. But please spare my young son, I beg you. He's the only male left in the family, and we must have one to serve the ancestors.
Jai, Jai, Kali Ma.
And he's just a little boy.
Jai, Jai,
he spared his life.
Jai, Jai, Kali Ma.
No, they didn't want any witnesses. So, in the darkness of that cold autumn night, Birure slit the throats of both father and his young son and tossed their bodies in a winding sheet of weeds and dark grass under the waters of the Thakurji lake.
Poor little boy!
A year later, Birure and his family were returning home by boat from a festival. They stopped on the sandbanks of the Ichamoti River to wait for the tide and to cook a meal. They were all happy, the boatmen on one side of the boat and Birure and his family on the other. It was a moonlit night and the water gleamed across the salt flats. There was a slight breeze and everything seemed to ripple, even the sky in the moonlight.
Something happened.
An odd sound. A splash, a swoosh of water, and a small cry.
What happened?
The boatmen's faces went pale. They had had experiences of these salt marshes, and they knew that large crocodiles used to lurk on the sandbanks behind the clumps of grass, waiting for their prey.
Crocodiles?
Yes. One of these crocodiles must have pulled Birure's son down back into the water.
Oh no!
They searched high and low, but no one could find the young boy. Exactly a year ago to the day, Birure had murdered a Brahmin man and his young son and tossed them into the lake. The consequences of this wicked deed affected Birure's family for years after. Some say it was Brahma's retribution. Others that the old Brahmin had cursed Birure as he died. Whatever it was, Birure did not live long. Mm. And one by one, all the sons of Biru's brothers died. Killed off by some disease or other before they reached manhood.
Our family is cursed.
No, when your father was born, your grandmother prayed at the shrine of Tarakshevar. There, with many tears, she told her story to a holy man and he gave her a charm.
Did it work?
Your father is still alive today, isn't he?
Whether it was because of the power of this charm or because the curse of God had lost its potency after two generations, my father had survived and after all those years was thriving. It seemed that Birure's curse had evaporated like camphor. But alas, the curse would rear its ugly head one more time and change our lives forever.
Durga, I have something to show you.
Is Auntie back? I've heard her mom made up.
No.
I wish she was here. She's been gone for weeks. I'd heard lots of noise last night. Someone was screaming. Or was it an animal? I even thought I heard a cat meowing.
Have a look.
Ma is sleeping. Is she not feeling well?
She's tired. She's had a long night.
Can I go in?
No. Stay here in the doorway. We mustn't disturb them.
What is that bundle next to her?
Oh. Your little baby brother came into the world last night.
A baby?
Look.
So small. He looks like a glass doll. Oh, he's opening his eyes. And I'm blinking.
He's looking at you.
That's what I heard last night. I thought it was a cat. Hello, Coca. Hello, little brother. I'm Durga. I'm going to look after you. We'll have such fun together.
We are going to call him Appu.
Appu? Appu? Yes, Appu. I like that name, Papa. It suits him.
God has blessed us with a son and heir. Now I must go and say my prayers and thanks.
Can I go in and hold him?
Not now. He's very fragile.
Please.
You'll have plenty of time soon. If he's anything like you, we'll have us all running around him in circles.
Durga, however, had only one thought. She longed for her auntie to come and see her newborn brother. Everybody else came, but not her own auntie.
And look at that pretty smile.
Child as she was, Durga knew well enough that nobody in the house really loved her auntie. Neither her father nor her mother would make any effort to get her back again.
Auntie! Auntie!
Durga! Oh, my child.
Oh. Have you heard the news? Come and see. Come and see my new baby brother. Come home. Where have you been all this time? You're so thin.
My Sona Moni, I missed you so much.
That brother of yours has a healthy set of lungs. Huh? Lovely baby.
He is beautiful.
After all this time, the new moon shines in the house. Here, Durga, take this bundle of sticks into my hut. Huh? I will use it for the fire.
What is it, Auntie? Auntie? You're standing so still, as if you've seen a ghost.
Your voice, Sona Muni. For a moment there, you sounded just like my Bishveshwari.
Your daughter?
She used to sing that song you were singing. I never knew exactly how she died. She went to her husband's house and within the year, a fever, they said.
And the gentle swish of the bamboo and the songs of many birds came floating together across all the years of the old woman's life.
Auntie, please don't look so sad. Sit here in the shade. You look tired.
Oh, thank you, my dear. Oh, it is hot today. Would you like another story?
Yes, please.
All right, my child. Demons, gods, bandits, or princes and princesses?
All of them. Mahabharata.
Yes, yes. Let's see. How about the birth of Korno?
Who is Korno?
Oh, the brother of the five Pandav brothers.
I thought they were only five.
But you see, there was one more before the brothers. A secret one. One golden morning, the young Princess Kunti sat at her window gazing at the eastern sky that was streaked with crimson and gold. It seemed to the young girl that she had never seen anything in her life as beautiful as the sun god who rode across the sky in his golden chariot. Kunti remembered a charm a sage had once given her. All she needed to do was to call and the god would come down and make her the mother of his son. She wondered what would happen if she made the wish now.
Did the sun god come down?
Yes, in a flash. He made love gently to the young princess, and when he went back up to the heavens, the princess had a son.
A beautiful baby.
Oh, but this was no ordinary baby. Even at birth, he wore armor that shone like burnished gold, and strange earrings in his ears, which glowed with a reddish light. But Kunti was unhappy. She couldn't keep the baby, as her father, the king, would be furious. She was unmarried.
What did she do?
She stole away in the dead of night, placed the baby in a box and floated him down the river. But her heart was heavy at the thought of what she had done. She knew that for the rest of her life, she would be haunted by the face of her innocent little baby.
Did the baby drown?
No. The baby was not destined to die because as it floated down the river towards Hastinapur, it was spotted and hauled ashore by a man named Adiratha, a humble charioteer. He took him home to his wife, Radha, and when she lifted the boy out of the box and saw his shining beauty, her heart was filled with joy.
And then?
Radha and Adiratha adopted the foundling. Huh? They named him Korno because of the wonderful rings in his ears. They knew that he could not be an ordinary child because of his beautiful suit of armor.
Durga, if you don't come here at once, you will be in so much trouble.
You better go, my Shona Muni.
I want to hear what happened next.
Another time. Korno had many adventures.
Did he ever meet his real mother again?
Yeah, you will have to wait.
Go.
Go, before we both get into trouble.
I want to hear the rest of the story, Auntie.
Look after Oppu for me for a bit, please.
Me?
Yes. You are his father, aren't you?
How about asking Durga? Where's she?
She's gone off somewhere.
What about old auntie?
She's gone down to the tank for a bathe.
I really can't be disturbed right now.
I need a bath.
Can't you take him with you?
Look, I'm just asking you to keep an eye on him for a few moments.
And I said that
I wouldn't mind if you were actually earning some money. But you can't even summon up the courage to ask your tenants to pay up what you're due.
I can't just walk in and demand money.
Yes, you can. Especially when they're months in arrears and we're almost starving. And especially with that old witch eating us out of house and home.
Hey! You can chatter away if you must, but I have to work. Mother has no idea. She thinks money grows on trees. What are you doing? Oi! That's my slipper. Chee! You can't eat that. It's dirty. I knew this would happen. Get off. No, don't take my pen. You can't eat that. I need it. Yes, that's better. Yeah, lie down on the floor and go to sleep. I have a lot of work to do. How can such a small child make such a racket? What? Eh? Oh, the little birdie. Yes, it's pretty. You like the birdie, do you? It's not going to come into your lap. I wish I knew what on earth you were saying. Are you talking to the birdie? What are you saying, little Oppu?
I was electrified by the bird, and watching me, my father's irritation left him, and a feeling of deep tenderness took its place. His mind went back to a night many years ago, when he had just returned from a visit to Western India. He had been advised to go back to his village and fetch his wife. He traveled by boat, and when he got to the village, he lost his way a little and had to ask for directions. He had only been to his wife's village once since his marriage.
Hello? Hello? Is anyone at home?
A slender, fair-faced young woman came out to see who it was. But as soon as their eyes met, she disappeared inside the house. Horihor wondered who she was. Could this be his wife? Was it possible she had grown up so much? His questions were answered when later Shorbojoya came into his room.
Come and sit down.
Horihor looked at my mother in amazement. He could see in this young woman no resemblance to the girl he had married 10 years ago. It looked as if someone had fashioned an entirely new creature. The simplicity of the child's face had gone, but it did not take my father long to realize that in its place had come a beauty that was very rare indeed.
Don't look so surprised.
You look so different, grown up.
I was only 10 years old when we married. Did you think I'd stay the same forever?
So, how are you?
It's been such a long time. I thought you'd forgotten me. Why did you stay away so long?
I...
Was it because you didn't like me?
No. It was wrong of me. I'm sorry.
Do you like what you see now?
Give me your hand.
These are the only bangles I have. Shell.
I hope I can buy you some gold bangles one day.
Silver will do.
My mother was having a good look at my father. She had noticed that he was youthful and healthy. His limbs were shapely and he had an elegance not common among Bengali villagers.
People were saying that you'd become a hermit, that you would never return. I did my best not to believe them and went on hoping you would come back.
It has been a long time.
10 years. I often worried what would become of me. Would this be my life? Who would look after me when my parents died? Where would I live? How?
Everything will be all right now. Did you know who I was when you saw me standing at the gate? I want the truth now.
What a question. Of course I did. At first I wasn't quite sure, but then...
You guessed.
No, I knew. Didn't you notice I pulled my sari over my face and went inside?
One question kept coming into my mother's mind. Would her husband take her with him? Or would he stay with her for a little while and then go back to Banaras or Gaya? It was on the tip of her tongue to ask him, but she could not force the words out. My father solved the problem.
I'm going to take you home to Nischindipur tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes. Don't you want to come?
You've been away for years. Why can't you stay a few days at least? My father and mother won't want you to go so soon. And besides, I have a friend, my best friend. She wants you to go to her house the day after tomorrow. You'll meet her tomorrow morning. She said she was going to drop in to have a good look at you.
Oh. Who is this best friend of yours?
Geeta. She's married now, but her home is not far. It's on the other side of the village. Please stay. A while longer.
Then you'll come back with me?
Yes, of course. I've waited for this day. I'd almost lost hope of ever seeing you again. It's a full moon.
The road of our new life, stretching out into the future.
Our future.
My father became conscious of the deep mystery that lies at the heart of life. There, in that remote village, under the shade of the bamboo grove, there was home. There was love.
Appu, we walk through life on a winding path, sometimes strewn with flowers, others where the road is paved with thorns.
And at every turn, we wonder what the goddess of life has in store for us at the next crossroads.
Oppu's mother, your baby boy is growing fast.
Ah. He is, and he has 2 little teeth now.
Oh. And his big sister dotes on him. Huh?
Yes, Durga is lazy when it comes to all things, but looking after her brother. If I want her to do some cleaning, she's nowhere to be seen. But if I ask her to look after Oppu for me, she's there, quick as a shot.
Durga is still a child.
She's a good girl. But she's wild, always foraging in the jungle for fruit.
Durga's a growing girl, Oppu's mother. Maybe she's looking for food because she's hungry.
What are you saying? That I starve my child?
I didn't say that.
That's what you implied though, isn't it?
You have such a short temper, so quick to jump down my throat, huh? All I was saying was that Durga is like most children. Mm. They grow, huh? They eat.
If it wasn't for that old vampire gobbling up half our food, there'd be more to go around.
Indra's an old woman now. She can't eat that much.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, she did come round to my house last week begging for some rice and dal.
Oh, begging? How dare she? I feed her every day.
And auntie came to mine begging for some sweets. She said she was starving.
She's not my auntie. I don't know where she came from, but I wish she'd go back there.
She's a curse on our lives.
That Sheshbo was screaming at my children again today.
About what?
They picked up a coconut that had fallen and she claimed they were stealing from her.
Hi, hi.
A coconut grows on a tree. Does she own the tree, I asked her. She started hurling curses at my head. I feel sorry for you, Opu's mother, having her as a neighbor. Oh,
she's very difficult.
That Sheshbo is selfish. Such a whiny, loud voice, huh? Heartless bitch.
What?
I'm only saying what you think. Just because her husband is a little wealthier than the rest of us, she behaves as if she were a Rajkumari and we are all urchins.
Oh, look, there's your auntie. Oh, what is she wearing?
Oh my goodness, look at her, Opu's mother. Your auntie is parading up and down. Hey, hey.
Where did you get that shawl from?
Isn't it a lovely color? It's new, you know, I can still smell the starch.
I asked you a question.
Ramnath gave it to me. It cost him 9.5 annas.
Granny, that red color suits you.
You look just like a bride. It's so beautifully warm and thick. It will keep the cold out in the winter months.
Did you ask Ramnath for that shawl? Or did he just happen to gift it to you?
I asked him once or twice.
Once or twice. If I know you, you nagged him to death. How often must I tell you? I won't have you going around begging. Not whilst you're under my roof.
I leave it for Durga when I die. She can wear it when she grows up.
But you won't die, will you? You'll just live on and on. If you must beg, then go. Live somewhere else. Do us all a big favor.
Gains and birches may hurt the feet, but a bowl of rice still tastes as sweet.
One morning, a woman called Dashi Thakrun, who kept a small stall in the village, walked into the yard and called to my mother from the foot of the steps.
Opu's mother, you owe me 2 paise and I've come to collect.
I haven't bought anything off you.
But your old auntie did.
What?
Old Inder bought a custard apple from me yesterday. She said I could come and get the money from you.
Be ridiculous. A custard apple indeed.
Are you suggesting that I would come all the way in the heat of the day and tell you a lie for 2 paise?
There are so many custard apples growing wild in the forest. Even the cows get bored of eating them. Why would anyone who lives in this village need to pay to eat one?
Ask her yourself if you don't believe me. The trade price for a custard apple is 4 paise. But she's an old woman. So I very kindly let her have one for just 2 paise.
There you are.
What is it, my dear?
Don't you my dear me, you old hag. You're more than half in your grave already. Doesn't it occur to you to be careful with money? Especially when it belongs to the people you live off? Dashi says you bought a custard apple off her yesterday.
Oh, I couldn't resist it.
Not even Durga does that. Today it's a custard apple. Last week it was a sweet. Where do you expect me to find the money to pay for all the things you fancy eating? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Do give her the money, please, huh? Just this once. It was so ripe. You won't have me for much longer.
It's money, money, money with you all the time. You think of nothing else.
What about me? Are you going to leave me to whistle for my money? I have never had so much trouble with a customer before. Auntie, it was very wrong of you to ask me for that apple if you don't have the money to pay. It's all right for you two to quarrel, but I'm a poor woman. I'll come back again this evening. See that you have the money ready for me then.
Auntie Dashi. Auntie's very old. She was just hungry, Aunt Dashi, and it was a lovely custard apple. I know because I'd have of it with her. Besides, you have a whole tree of them at home, haven't you, Auntie?
I want my money.
I'll tell you what, Auntie. I've 1 paisa in my doll's box. I can't get it right now because Ma has the key. But if you promise not to tell her, I will pay you 1 paisa. Will that do?
I expect to get paid in full.
And this is when my mother turned to Indir Thakrun with all the fury that had been gathering in her heart for years.
Get out of my house!
No, my dear, don't say that.
There's no place for you here.
Oh, I'm too old to go away and live somewhere else.
You're good at begging. Go and beg from the neighbors.
Just a corner, that's all I want, just a corner. I'm an old, dying woman. Where is there for me to go besides this piece of land?
Stop! Don't you dare mention this piece of land. Get out. Go away this very minute. Go on. Stop your whining, Durga. Come inside the house.
Imbir looked about her blindly with eyes which saw nothing. And then she began to grope around with her hands for something to hold on to, like a drowning man.
I won't have you sitting here a minute longer. It's getting late and I've got work to do. There's no room for you here.
The old woman took hold of her bundle and with great effort struggled to her feet. She walked across the yard. Her eyes fell on the broom she used to sweep the yard with. It was leaning against the wall. She saw the grass growing in the yard and the lemon tree she had planted with such care. And then she looked at the broom again. She had been so fond of it. She thought of Durga and Opu and this piece of land which had been her uncle Brojo's. She was 75 years old and these were all she had. All she had ever known or loved. And they were being taken away from her.
Stop crying. You've set your brother off now.
Indir Thakurun was lying under the plinth of the Palit's rice barn. She had begun to feel ill as soon as she got to her feet and staggered away from Horihor's house. She went as far as she could and then lay down in the nearest shade she could find.
She's sinking fast.
She was burning up in the sun.
Now she's just cold.
Auntie.
She's dying.
It's only a faint, I think. She'll come round in a bit.
This is no faint. She's not going to come round. Horihor hasn't come. I suppose he's not at home. I send word to them.
Pour some Ganges water into her mouth.
Look, she's opening her eyes.
I must have lived a very sinful life. In my last birth. All this sorrow. But my daughter was still alive.
What did she say?
I didn't catch it.
Auntie, aren't you feeling very well? I'll try again with the water.
None of it passed her lips.
After a few minutes, they closed her eyelids, and from the sunken sockets, tears welled out and flowed down her wasted cheeks. The death of Indir Thakurun brought the old days to an end in Nischindipur village. Indir Thakurun had been dead for 4 or 5 years. It was January and the day of the festival of the goddess Shuroshuti. And it was still quite cold. A few people from Nischindipur were going to look at the blue-throated jay in the open country outside the village. The way lay along a narrow path which was hemmed in on both sides by undergrowth.
Hori, if you ever want to go fishing, come with me to the Bonchi Beel. Mm. Nepal Poi, you know him of course, lives in the east part of the village. Well, he's got a dam built there. He gets about 100 pounds of fish there every day. And each fish weighs about 10 pounds.
Really? Mm. Oh, just a minute, what's that boy of mine got to? Opu! Oh, Opu! Yeah, don't lag behind, Opu. Walk along in front
Daddy,
of us.
Daddy! Something went into the forest. What was it? It had big ears.
10-pound fish, you say?
I heard that one night there were so many fish jumping around in the middle where the lotus leaves are that it sounded like a herd of cows lashing their tails at milking time.
Yeah, you and your stories.
It's true.
Daddy, what was it?
I don't know, child. I can't go answering all your questions. You've been asking me what's this and what's that ever since we left the house. Now, run along ahead, please, where I can see you.
It's an old beel. Guldus knows how long it's been there, and it's very deep, too. Out in the middle, there's a black patch of water.
Look, Daddy! I saw it again! It's gone now!
such huge.
No, don't go in there. It's full of thorns.
Cut you to ribbons, Opu, my boy. You have to learn the ways of the jungle before you go running headlong into it.
Listen to your uncle. What a nuisance you are. I've told you 100 times to be quiet, but you take no notice. That's why I didn't want to bring you.
What was it, Daddy?
I don't know. I didn't see it. Probably a wild pig or something.
It was too small to be a pig, Daddy.
It was a hare, Opu. They live in the thatch grass.
I can't believe it. A real live hare.
This is the first time the boy has come further than a few houses away. I think he's overexcited. Next time you go fishing, tell me. Not that I'm any good with a rod, but I'd like to try my hand at it.
Some of the fishermen said there weren't fish in the beel, but evil spirits thrashing around. So they sat in the boat trembling with fear until there was enough light to see.
Fishermen, eh? So full of stupid superstition.
Between the jungle thickets in the open country grew clumps of tall grass, yellow flowering bushes and wild plum trees. And over all this luxuriant tangle of growth, the colmy creeper had spread its large green leaves, completely engulfing it. In the cool shade beneath its leafy roof, a few wild flowers, full open, thrust up their heads towards the sky in an attempt to catch the sunlight. Nature had scattered her riches with a prodigal hand, like a king whose bounty knows no end. We came to the end of the jungle path now and passed out into open country. The river lay ahead of us, and there were ruins of the firehouse of an old indigo factory.
Hard to imagine that our little village here used to be the headquarters of the Bengal indigo business. 14 factories around
here. All in ruins. Opu, you're always asking about factories. Well, there's one over there. It belonged to some Saabs. Yeah, can you see it?
Wow, it's so big.
Looks like the skeleton of some ferocious prehistoric monster.
In the old days, they say the manager of the factory ruled this area like an emperor. What was his name?
John L'Amour.
That's right. There was a time when the mighty John L'Amour had so much power that at the mere mention of it, tigers and cows went down to the same watering place to drink.
What's this, Daddy?
Yeah, it's a gravestone. The Saabs bury their dead.
Can you make out what it says? It's in English.
Very faint, but yes. Here lies Edwin L'Amour, the only son of John and Mrs. L'Amour. Born May 13, 1853... Died April 27, 1860. Poor boy. About your age, Opu.
I stood there for a while and thought of the boy buried there. I wondered if, like my family, he had an ancestral curse on his head. There were many trees round the grave, but nearest to it, with leafy branches spread wide to give it shade, was a wild shondal tree. And in the hot weather, by day or by night, whenever the wind blew up hard from the delta, it let its cluster of yellow flowers fall on the time-stained tomb of that forgotten foreign child. Everyone else might have forgotten him, but the trees of the forest still remembered.
Oh, holy pond, oh, holy flower, I worship you neath the noonday sky. A maiden's purity is my dower. My brother lives, and blessed am I. Wait a minute. Let me say my prayers, and then we'll go somewhere.
Where, Didi?
Never you mind. I'll take you very soon. Oh, holy pond. Oh, holy flower. I worship you neath the noonday sky. A maiden's purity is my dower. My brother lives, and blessed am I. What are you giggling about?
The words sound funny. My brother lives, and blessed am I.
I'm praying for you, you rascal. You think you're being clever, don't you? Just wait till I tell Mummy. You won't find it so funny then. I'm going to
My sister Durga was then between 10 and 11. She was a thin child and rather dark. Her clothes were dirty, and her hair was so dry that it blew about in whatever wind there was. Her face was not badly shaped, and she had very big eyes.
Come here. I want to tell you something.
What is it?
Look.
Green mango.
I sliced them up for you. Mummy hasn't got back from her bath, has she?
No.
Do you think you could get some oil and salt? I want to make a mango pickle.
Where did you get them from,
They'd fallen on the ground at the Pullets orchard. Go and get the oil and salt. Quickly. Mummy isn't back for a while.
Give me the coconut ball. I can put the oil straight in there and you can wash the back door in case she comes.
Mind how you pour it out. Don't spill any on the floor. Mummy will find out if you do. You're so clumsy sometimes.
There you are.
There. Hold out your hand. Here's one for you. Here, have another two. That's quite a lot. Don't they look nice? Do you think you could get a chili? If you can, I'll give you one more.
How can I? Mommy keeps them on the shelf and I can't reach it.
Durga? Durga?
Mummy's calling. We'd better go, but swallow the mango first.
Appu! Coming!
Wipe your face, you little monkey! You still got salt all over your mouth.
Where are you, Durga?
Delicious, Durga.
You seem to think I can do everything single-handed? I've been washing the whole morning, my body aches all over. You think I've the right to expect a little help from you? As for that little monkey, where has he got to?
Story.
You always want me to tell you the same one.
Please, please.
On one condition.
Anything.
When I finished and you dried off a little, you must go home and fetch the fruit bowl. I saw some ripe custard apples hanging on the lychee jungle, and I think we can knock a few down.
But Didi, the pole is too heavy for me.
Do you want this story or not?
Yes, yes. Now just tell me the story.
Where did we get up to?
The bit where Corner goes to learn how to be a warrior.
Oh, yes. My auntie Indira told me this story. One day, Parashurama was sleeping with his head on Corner's lap. Indra took the form of a wasp and started to drill a hole in Corner's thigh. Corner tried to shoo it away, but the wasp was determined. Corner could not move without waking up his guru. As the wasp drilled the hole and the warm blood started to trickle, it fell on Parashurama and he woke
up. All the characters in the Mahabharat, I liked Korno the best. I had a special sympathy for him. Korno the warrior, the outcast, the unlucky noble hero, the object of a pity that could never end. Where the sky bent down to the earth, I could see Korno, his hands laboring to drag the chariot wheels clear of the mud, being slain unfairly by Arjuna. The curse of Parshurama making him forget his fighting skills at the moment when he needed them most.
Appu, why are you waving your arms and legs around like that? What are you muttering about?
Nothing.
Silly boy! Come on, we have to milk the cow.
My sister Durga and I had gone foraging for mangoes in the forest. We had no sooner collected 8 or 9 when thick, black storm clouds gathered overhead.
Let's stand under this tree. The rain won't get through here.
The rain started to come down in a solid stream. It looked just like a thick curtain of smoke around us. The drops were so heavy that they snapped leaves off the trees, and everywhere there was the fresh, wet smell of the earth.
Didi, we're a long way from home. The rain's very hard.
Stand close to me. I wonder how much longer it would last. It can't go on forever. Besides, rain is good.
Flash! The wide curtain of darkness which covered the forest was split from end to end, and in that moment, it was bright everywhere.
Don't be frightened. Say a prayer and stand close to me. You're soaked through.
So are you. Looks like the whole forest is going to be uprooted by the wind and come down on top of us.
Don't be silly.
I keep looking to see if there's a thunderbolt speed into the ground.
Rain, rain, go away from me. There's a koromcha fruit on our lemon tree. Rain, rain, go away from me. There's a koromcha fruit on our lemon tree.
The lightning came again, and the eyes of us two helpless children were blinded by a stabbing blue flame, which tore aside the smoke screen of the rain which hid the forest. And we stood there, trapped in the terrifying pandemonium of nature gone mad.
Asha, have you seen Durga and my Oppu?
No, I haven't. Where did they go?
The two of them went out before the rain started. The storm's been over for a while now and it's getting dark.
Oh, don't worry, Auntie. I'm sure they're fine, huh? I probably had to take shelter somewhere. This rain will bring out the frogs. Won't it, Auntie?
There you are. I was so worried. You're soaked through. Look at you both. Where were you when the storm hit? Oppu, is that... What is that you're dragging? Durga, is that a coconut?
Shh, speak quietly, Mummy. Cherish Bo's out in the garden.
Look, can you see her from here? You know that coconut tree up against the fence? Well, it was lying at the foot of that. But just as we were getting away, Cherish Bo came out, and I think she saw me too.
And the branch is for your broom.
It's a lovely big coconut, isn't it, Mummy?
I have two, Mummy.
Yes, it's a lovely big coconut. And thank you for my new broom. The rain has made your face as lovely as jasmine flowers after a shower. But your lips, blue with cold, and your hair... Come here, both of you. Let me take your clothes off. Now you have to go to the veranda and wash your feet.
Come on, Appu. Dunnu, fetch the doll's box and bring it out here so I can see for myself.
Shejbo, what is all this about? Why are you standing out there on the porch? Come in.
I don't want to come in. I have come to see if what my children said was true.
I don't understand. Isn't that Durga's box? Dunnu, why are you taking it?
My daughter is not like yours. She is not taking the box.
Here it is, Mummy. Look, this is my necklace.
Aha!
What's happened?
That daughter of yours,
Durga,
she came to play with the children the other day and she stole this necklace from Tunu's doll box. The poor child was worried to death, thinking she'd lost it, until her cousin told her that he'd seen it in Durga's box. Your daughter is an absolute pest and a thief.
Oh, look, Mummy. These are mangoes she's picked from our tree.
These are green mangoes from our tree. She couldn't even wait for them to fall.
Durga? Durga? Did you take Tunu's necklace from her house?
Did she take it? Are you trying to make out that I'm telling a lie? And don't forget those mangoes.
No, Shejbo, I'm not suggesting that you're telling a lie.
You can ask her all you like. But I warn you, that girl will come to no good. At her age, she's taken to thieving. Goodness knows where she'll end up, but you'll see.
I don't know about the necklace, but there's no name on those mangoes. Children all over the world collect mangoes. There's no crime in that.
How dare you talk to me like that? You're just trying to argue yourself out of it. What garden of yours did those mangoes come from? Tell me that. There was no name on the money you wheedled out of me a year ago either. And what have you been saying about that? I'll pay you today. I'll pay you tomorrow. Next week. Next month. I've had enough. It has to stop. So pay up. I don't care where you get the money from, but get it. The truth is, the mother is a bigger thief as a daughter. The girl learned how to steal from the mother. The whole family are thieves.
My mother's eyes were full. Tears of humiliation and distress. That final insult had included her husband, and that was more than she could bear. She swung round on Durga and grabbed hold of her by her long wet hair, and with hands that were still covered in dal and rice, she began to slap and thump her, blow after blow.
You
feet!
You brought a curse on us all!
No, Mommy! Don't!
I might be able to breathe again and have some peace in my mouth!
Please stop it! Stop it, Mommy!
Look at you! Wandering around all day, not a drop of oil in your hair! Vagabond! Who would think you were a brother's daughter? Get out! Get out of this house and stay out! Oh! I wish you were dead!
Some strands of Durga's torn hair remained behind in my mother's hand. I was furious with my mother for pulling out Durga's hair. I loved my sister's hair. I could not say why, but I did. Especially when it hung long and dry over her eyes, or when the wind blew it straight up in the air.
Durga! Oh, Durga!
Durga was gone for the entire evening. I searched everywhere but couldn't find her. When my father came home and heard what had happened, he went out into the village to look for Durga. Durga did not say a word to anyone when she came in. She had her meal in silence and came to bed. I reached out in the dark and touched her.
Does it hurt a lot, Didi? Why did she hit you?
She hit me behind the ear and made me bleed. It's still throbbing.
Shall I get some oil from the lamp and put some on it?
No, it doesn't matter. Tomorrow we will go and pick some berries from the Pandit's garden. They're ripe, big and sweet like sugar.
Mustn't tell Mummy.
No, just you and me. We'll go and nobody's looking.
It seemed to me that my sister Durga had no one to care for her. With old Aunt Indir dead and gone, she had lost the one adult in her life who truly cared for her. Wherever Durga had come from, she had come alone. And she had no friends here either. One thought possessed my young mind. How to drive away all her unhappiness and to make up to her for all the things she had to do without. But most of all, I worried about my mother shouting at her and wishing her dead. It was a curse that hung over my anxious memories at night for years to come. Durga was played by Riya Somaya and Indir by Meera Sayal. Shorbo Joya was played by Ayesha Dharkar, Horihor by Shiv Grewal and Opu by Adnan Chaudhary. Baby Opu was played by Ava Taylor. Palit was played by Ace Bhatti, Shejbo and Dashi by Pooja Ghai and Tunu by Nuha Fabiha Sultana. Opu the narrator was played by Sagar Arya. Bibhuti Bhushan Banerjee's Pothir Panchali, Song of the Road, was dramatized by Tanika Gupta and directed in Salford by Nadia Molinari.
And you can hear the concluding episode next Sunday at 3. After the news, Mariella Frostrup talks to Maggie O'Farrell about her novel Instructions for a Heatwave and to Jamie Attenberg and Michael Kimball on how contemporary literature is tackling obesity.